Good day, and welcome to Sea to Ski with Sarah and T, putting the P in professionally managed vacation rentals. This is the Vacation Rental Management Professionals Podcast, coming to you from the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
And from the Rocky Mountains of Colorado. I'm Sarah Bradford from Winter Park and Steamboat Springs.
And I'm Tim Cafferty from the Outer Banks of North Carolina and Sandbridge, Virginia. Together, we bring you the first podcast focused solely on professionally managed vacation rentals across the nation, or as we like to call it, Sea to Ski
with Sarah and T.
In the next 30 minutes, we hope you'll join us on a journey as we dive into issues affecting folks like us, the professional vacation rental manager, allowing you to run your business more effectively, make more money, and most importantly, have fun doing it. We are back and better than ever. I'm Tim.
And I'm Sarah.
And I'm Clark.
That's Clark Twitty, my friend from Twitty & Company, who is our guest this week. Sarah, how about that? Another North Carolinian does vacation rentals. You are outnumbered today.
I know, but I'm sort of a North Carolinian, so we're all in this together, if you count back to 1991 when I was there. But
absolutely,
we are so excited to have Clark. I think a lot of you have heard of Clark Twitty and his company. You can't really forget. Once you hear Twitty, can you forget that name?
Clark is indeed with Twitty & Company. He and his brother run it, but I'm going to let you explain the history of the company, sir.
Hey, guys. Before I start, it really is a pleasure to be here today. I've loved your podcast. I think you do a great job, and it's really a humble experience for me to be here today. So I know we've got a time limit, but I had to say that. We're very fortunate at Twitty & Company. We've been in business now for about 40 years. It's a family business. My mom and dad started it. We started in the little town of Duck, North Carolina in 1978, and we have grown in tiny little bits over that time. And here we are 40 years later. My brother and I represent the second generation of a family business. But the story is not really the family. It's the people who work there. And we are just very fortunate to be surrounded, as I'm sure many of you are, by truly wonderful and remarkable people. So we feel very fortunate. Here we are trying to do good things in the next 20 years.
All right. So Clark, I'm not going to let you off the hook that well. Talk to me about the inventory, your company, and the specifics about Twitty.
Sure. So Twitty & Company does business on the northern Outer Banks of North Carolina. We have a good mix of properties from fairly small to fairly big. Our specialty in the northern Outer Banks is a higher end in terms of a luxury stay. We manage a little over 1,000 homes, our staff, a little over 150 W-2. But we're keenly aware that we started with 4 homes. And the right answer is, unless if we start thinking we're too big and too proud, we'll go right back to having 4 homes or less. So the right answer is 1 at a time. We're very fortunate to be where we are.
1,000 properties. You did hear that, right?
I know. I have so many questions. So Clark, I've heard you are the gold standard. Maybe a guy named Tim said that. And the fact that you're doing mass quantities, which is thousands of properties, plus you're known as being the top in luxury and knowing how to nail that, what's your secret? I mean, how do you provide a luxury experience to 1,000 properties with so much going on?
You know, I always start out with some humility. We don't really have a secret. So the secret sauce to Twitty & Company is, unfortunately, that there is no secret sauce. It's hard. It's one at a time. It's all dependent upon the people we have around us. And we start with personal relationships on the homeowner side, and then we try to build personal relationships with our guests. We try to hire the best people we can, and we try and commit to pretty simple values over time. And we have been fortunate that over time, as we have had good opportunities to move in the market and expand in the market, we've had good people that focus not only on hospitality, but also process. And process is very important, but process always yields to people because people are imperfect. And as a result, our processes are about 90%, and then the rest of it is always just good people trying to make individuals happy one person at a time. So I wish I had secret sauce, but it's just hard work, and it's one at a time.
I joined your company. Let's say you hired me, God willing, and I walked in the first day. What would you do to indoctrinate me to make sure that even though I am imperfect, I'm going to learn the Twitty culture? What are some of the things you might do to be sure that the 10% with his people is doing what you want to be doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. Number one, we, as you've probably heard a million times, we always look for the attitude and then we train the skill. So we look for people who smile. One of our tricks is we'll let people sit in the lobby for a little while before we bring them back to a formal interview, and we'll say we're running behind, and we like to see if that person engages at the front counter. We like to see if they smile naturally or are they nervous and withdrawn. And then one of the things we'll do right away is try to introduce you to as many people as possible. And then in front of everyone, we'll say as a group, it's not your job to get along well with everybody and remember everybody's name. That's our job. Our job is to make you feel as welcome and surrounded by people who are as dedicated to your success as anybody. And you're asking you to trade a day of your life for something. We want it to be a good exchange, and it's our job to help you be successful. You've done everything you need to do to get in the door. The responsibility now is the veterans in the company have to bring you along with us, and that's very important.
I love that. I've never even thought about it that way. Instead of making someone feel like they have to earn it once they're there, to make them feel so welcome.
I have a question for you, Clark, regarding the other end of it, and that's dealing with the properties that you have. I will say that Clark is indeed the gold standard in my market. When you're interviewing a property owner coming on board, what kind of things do you look for there? I know you're fairly selective about what you take on board, right?
I'm embarrassed when you say all these good things because we've made so many mistakes over 40 years. We try to just learn quickly and fail fast and fail cheap and innovate and seize on opportunities. Anytime we talk with a property owner, we start with just a simple conversation and we look for a good fit in terms of our beliefs and our philosophy. There's no such thing as a bad company. There's just different philosophies to achieve results. So the retail analogy is there's everything from Nordstrom's to Walmart and Dollar General. And in many ways, the property managers are reflective of those things. And that doesn't mean that Walmart or Nordstrom or Dollar General is bad. There's a market for that. So we try to make sure that we have the right philosophical idea. We have the right agreement on an achievement and a result that's realistic and actionable and agreed upon. And then we try to make sure the quality is a match. So we look for good homeowner, good home, fits in with what we think is a good strategic market fit. Otherwise, someone's going to be disappointed.
Do you have goals in the sense of we want this many properties or revenue or anything like that?
No, ironically, we have never had revenue targets or home growth targets of any kind. We've always said that a home number is an outcome of something. A home number is an outcome of a good personal relationship with a homeowner and a satisfied guest. And over time, much like a scoreboard, you've heard that some of your probably favorite coaches will say, John Wooden will say that what he's looking for is each one of his folks to achieve their potential. And if they do so, the scoreboard will reflect that. But ultimately, the strongest competition is internal. Can we achieve our potential? So we don't have revenue targets. Obviously, we like to make more money like everybody else, but we think the best way to do that is to deliver great service to great homeowners and guests and significant or rather consistent quality. And we think if we take care of that, the financial outcomes will take care of themselves.
Tim, when I was with him recently, he was telling us about that you have some homes upwards of, is it true, 20 plus bedrooms? Do I have that right?
That's true. As the Outer Banks has grown over time, one of the things we saw was the market tended to gravitate to bigger homes, in part for revenue, in part because it was an untapped market, and in part because it was just a frontier that had not been solved yet. It was a little bit like the Mount Everest. You climb it because it's there. And we do have several properties that are over 20 bedrooms. We have some that are approaching 30 bedrooms, but we also have some that are 4 and 5 and things like that. So the ones that we talk about the most are obviously the biggest and fanciest ones, but we're keenly aware that our bread and butter and who we are as a company continues to be a single family rental home in Duck and Corolla. And that's who has kept us in business for years and years and years. So we're happy to have some of the bigger ones, but we also don't forget every bedroom's important. And ultimately, the story is not the bedroom, but the person in it. And we never forget that.
That's a good way to say it. The question about that in the big homes, because even in Winter Park, when we only had 4-bedroom homes were our big homes, and then I took one on with 7 or 8 bedrooms, and I thought, ooh, I wonder how this is going to go. When you started to branch into 10 bedrooms, 15, 20, and plus, how did you change your marketing around that? Did you just put it out there and it booked, or was there something strategic you did to make sure you could fill a home that large?
Well, we're always conservative in our growth estimates, so we try to never overpromise, and we try to never speak with certainty about the future, because knowing the future is not given to anyone. So what we try to do is test and evolve and test and learn and test and learn very rapidly. So what we say is, while we may not know the future, we do try to make the right decision at different points on time based on good data. So we don't know what the market is, but we think we can test it rapidly and measure it rapidly and adjust rapidly. So we don't think necessarily, for example, big companies is necessarily good. We don't think bigger is better. We think better is better. And the only way to know that is to test and evaluate and learn very rapidly so that as we develop these new properties and try to market these new properties, we're doing so in a way that is based on data and based on agility. So to answer your question, we didn't know much about strategic marketing in that sense, but we tried to learn very rapidly.
What is it going on? What's the phenomenon that wasn't going on, let's say, in the 90s?
I think what was happening was we began to see a different type of investor arrive on the Outer Banks. Single family homes, 6 bedrooms, 7, 4, 5, typically are one demographic of folks who have worked hard their entire lives and managed to save and been responsible, and now they have a second home. The bigger homes are almost inevitably much more sophisticated investors. They're much more high net worth or even ultra high net worth individuals who are looking to achieve financial results at a different level than someone who might be at a 4, 5, or 6 bedroom. Now, that doesn't mean that their dollars count more, because everyone had to work hard for what they have, and we never forget that. The investors on the big homes, I think, began to see the Outer Banks as a national destination and began to see returns on bigger homes compete very well with more conventional investments. And in fact, particularly in some of the stock market volatility of the late 2006s, 7, 8s, 9s, started to see vacation rental homes as producing higher returns. And that's what led some of those more sophisticated investors, I think, to some of those bigger homes.
Do you think we're going to see out here in Colorado or out in California or down in the Panhandle, do you think we're going to see larger and larger homes being able to be rentable? These 10, 20 mega homes, we'll call it. Do you think that's a trend we're going to see across the country?
I think it's certainly possible. I think that as we continue to see stock market volatility, I think that money only goes where it feels safe. And as folks learn more about the vacation rental space, not only from a guest perspective, but also an asset management perspective, each rental home, particularly these big homes, is an operating company that exists to maximize revenue and minimize cost. And I think that as some of these money managers and sophisticated investors look for alternatives to the conventional stock market, bond market, I think if they know about vacation rentals, it becomes more attractive. So I think the trend is going to move further in that direction of bigger, not homes, but bigger investments in search of bigger returns. And that manifests itself in the form of some of these bigger homes. So I think we'll see more of it over time.
How many people does it take to clean a 24-bedroom in the time you would need to do it?
Well, there's only two levers to pull, and I may have learned this from your episode. We've got speed and quality. And the only thing that can pull them both is experience applied through process. We typically will assign a family, believe it or not, a nuclear family to each of these big homes. So it's typically 7, 8, 10 people, and they are there at 9:30 and 10 o'clock in the morning, ushering the guests out of the house and making sure they try to leave on time. And then we inevitably hold these big homes to the last possible second. And then we'll have not just cleaners, but we'll have pool folks, we'll have exterior folks, and we also have what we call a quarterback, for lack of a better phrase, who is in the house, what we call them as an ambassador, to greet the incoming guests and help the leaving guests leave. And in the interim, they're quarterbacking all the service delivery for the home. So that's one way we have done it. And then that person ultimately will greet the guest in person upon their arrival. And the owner is paying for that, but ultimately, as we know, the guest is paying for everything.
Okay, so Sarah, so now you see, I have to compete against this guy.
I know, I have 100 more questions. It's so interesting.
Well, I'd like to get him to shift into one little area as well that we haven't touched on enough. That folks may not understand the logistics of the Outer Banks. We're very long, not very wide. Clark and his brother Ross have ventured into an area that not many have been brave enough to go, and that is the four-wheel drive area, where you dominate and you have some of the same houses you just spoke about up there. If you, first of all, describe what I'm talking about and then the challenges that are unique to that.
So what we call the four-wheel drive area is the northernmost area of the Outer Banks, which is accessible only by four-wheel drive, and it's actually just sand dunes. You envision a purely coastal barrier island, and still that's very much what it is. You all can only get there by driving along the beach, and there is no commercial activity there for in any way, shape, or form. And we manage about 150 homes there. And it's a very different challenge than what we call homes on the pavement. They're harder to service. They're harder to staff. They're more expensive to service. They're more expensive to staff. And then the civic infrastructure is not there. For example, city water, everything is well water and things like that. So they are more unique, which means they are more of a niche and means they're more differentiated in the market. But as a result, they're also more expensive to operate profitably. And we typically see some profit pressure in four-wheel drive. We went up there strongly because we believe that area was going to be the future, and we wanted to be strong in that area. Having said that, I think we're seeing greater growth right now on the pavement because of that area is probably, without further infrastructure, will only be able to accommodate a limited amount of future growth.
And you also have the challenge of, like, if a toilet's clogged, absolutely, maintenance man's gone for the day pretty much, and then garbage collection. You have to take garbage down as well, right?
Absolutely. There's no civic service of any kind, so we're responsible for taking out trash, particularly if septic systems, if the septic backs up. And inevitably, as we all know, septics never back up at 2 p.m. They back up at 9 p.m. So now we're having to get a lot of service delivery to a fairly remote area at obscure hours, and it can become very expensive to the homeowner. Ultimately, the burden is you have to communicate with the homeowner quickly and accurately to avoid pop-up expenses that make an investment untenable.
I mean, I'm all about staying off the grid and hiking. We do hut trips here in Colorado, but why does someone stay at a house like that versus one with fish restaurants down the road?
Typically, I think it's a different kind of vacationer. It's a vacationer who likes being off the beaten path, who likes driving to a house literally right along the ocean. They enjoy the remoteness of it, and they enjoy the uniqueness of it. I think a lot of cases, the folks who stay up there will pack massive igloo coolers, and they won't come back down to the pavement. It forces families to spend much more time as a family because there's much less to do. And then I will also say the beaches are a different kind of beach in that area. The water is much more shallow. We have many more tidal pools for younger children. It's also where the wild horses live here in North Carolina. So there's a big herd of wild horses there that is very scenic. And some people would say it's one of the last untouched Outer Banks areas, although development obviously has changed that a little bit. So I just think it's different and appeals to a different vacationer.
Do you ever have someone arrive there and go, "There is nothing here. I want out"?
Absolutely. We try to do a really good job up front of educating our guests who have never stayed there. That's one of the first questions we ask when we see guests interested in that area. We actually have a gentleman who meets people in the parking lot and teaches them how to, for example, reduce their tire pressure to drive on the sand, and then helps them get to their homes, particularly at night with no streetlights. GPS doesn't work. Our maps and our communication have to be really good. But when we bump into folks who just say, "This isn't what I expected," obviously we want everybody to have a great time. So we will immediately try to work with them and say, how do we turn what could be a frustrating situation into something that's positive and constructive?
If you're 100% full, it's the third week of July, and they say, "We just never realized that we were going to be in the boondocks." How could you make that right?
Well, so in an example like that, I'd say, well, let's talk about what the boondocks is. And if they say, "Well, I have to be honest, I'm in a minivan. It's not four-wheel drive." Well, then we would try to arrange transportation. And if they say, "Well, gosh, we weren't prepared and we didn't bring enough coolers to pack our groceries," we'd try to provide coolers. If they say it's just too remote, we would say, "What do you want to be close to? And what kinds of activities would change this for you?" So we'll try to salvage a bad experience and make it a positive one. And at the end, it's a week long. And if they don't like at all, we'll try to help them find something on the pavement. But in the summertime, if you're 100%, there's only so much you can do. But I think we try to bore down on specific activities that would help them turn a negative into a positive.
You know, Clark, you are a self-proclaimed fan of our podcast. Thank you. So you know what a dry pullover moment is, right? And you may not realize it, but you just had one. I want everyone to get it. And that is, instead of a guest calling and they're upset and they're frustrated, you just give them money. Clark just pointed out three or four things he could do in that situation. And I think the pullover moment is find out what are they upset about? What do they want? What do they feel are not getting? And see if you can provide that without throwing them $5,000. Do you agree?
I do agree. I think on behalf of the homeowner, we obviously have a responsibility to safeguard the homeowner's money as well. And then ultimately, if we really want them to have a great family memory, we mark vacations by memories. we try to create some memories that they are somehow, that they have a roadblock to creating a memory. Tell us what the roadblocks are to a great family experience and let us help you remove those roadblocks so that you can go create the memory that you're here for.
Another pullover moment. Okay, Tim, what you got?
Well, I almost hesitate to go here, but I am going to go here because the reason I hesitate is because I know my staff listens to this podcast. And I want you to talk about how you take care of your staff, about what you do to make sure your folks are happy. Tell us about trips and masseuses and all that sort of stuff.
The only way we've been able to be successful as a company has very little to do with anyone with a last name named Twitty. So we try to attract the very brightest we can and retain the very brightest we can. And as we all know, if you have great and smart people who work for you and you don't take care of them, they'll go work for somebody else. So we try to go above and beyond, and we try to be a great place for not only the employee, but also their families. So we do things like we do health care and dental and 100% of that. And we have, over the years, have brought in food, and we'll do lunches almost all week long. We will do things like company-wide trips. If the company has a good year, we will pack up the entire company and take trips to places like Paris, Prague. We have been all over the world together as a company, and we have, number one, it creates a great memory for them, but it's also good for teamwork. And we have done things. We've experimented with masseuses. We've experimented with gym memberships. We had a gym for several years that we offered to our employees at no cost. And we do that because, number one, it's the right thing to help our team be happy and safe and sound for their family. We've talked about housing in years past. But we're also very humble because these are very capable people, and if we don't take care of them and make sure we're a great place to work, they'll go somewhere else, and they vote with their feet every morning on whether or not to come to work at Twitty & Company. Those are the kinds of things that keep me awake at night. I'm sitting in Tim's beautiful office, and there are a lot of places to work on the Outer Banks that are great places to work. And if we don't do the right thing, these smart people will go somewhere else.
Wow. So I sort of do want you to edit the trips out, Tim, but since you probably won't, I have a follow-up question on that. You go to Paris. You seriously took your whole team to Paris.
We did. And we've gone to Puerto Rico before. We've gone to Paris. We've gone to Prague. We have gone to Las Vegas. We've gone to Nashville. We just think it's important that if we have a good year, we think you can do pay raises, obviously, and you can do bonuses, and that's important. But we think since we're in the vacation business, it's a pretty interesting thing to take all of our team on vacation, and then we all get to see, hopefully, good service, and then we get to create memories that strengthen teamwork within the company. So that on those sweltering hot August days when it's 107 degrees and it's 5:45 and we all want to go home, we know that, wait a second, we're in this together and we're all friends and we help each other. And we hope that those kinds of bonds we create on a trip help on those August afternoons and evenings.
Yeah, it's like it's August, but Paris is a-coming. So when you go to these trips, what do? Is it like a three-day trip? Do you do team-building activities, or you just say, have fun, guys? Tell us a little bit about it.
No, well, actually, we don't all go at once. We'll keep the office open, so we do that on behalf of owners and guests. So we'll actually split the company in half, and we'll have an A or a B. Inevitably, there's a lot of schedule conflicts with busy people. So folks will sign up for either the A trip or the B trip. And then we'll both go to the same place for the same period of time. And we do not do structured activities when we're there. My dad was always adamant that when you give people free time, don't interfere with it. So different groups and have different interests. Some people will want to go to the museum. Some people want to go to the stores. Some people want to go out to visit all the bars. And we try to not interfere in that at all. And we look for opportunities that can involve the most people.
Jeez, Tim. You might want to put that on the P&L.
Yeah. This is my successful friend, Clark. Let me just mention that. Yeah. And he also mentioned his dad. We'd be remiss if we didn't say Doug. He is a legend in this area.
Yeah.
But at any rate, it's time for rapid fire. Sarah, you ready?
I am so ready for this one.
Okay. So we have questions Clark's not ready for, and we're going to get him to expand on these or answer in one word, whatever he wishes. And so start the clock. Charcoal grill or gas grill?
For me, charcoal. For gas. Hard-lined, not upstairs unless it's hard-lined.
Favorite book about business?
One I've read recently is, I just read Rebel Yell. Actually, the one that I refer to the most right now is the new Ray Dalio book, Principles. It's actually very readable and very actionable. I'd recommend it without hesitation.
I know the answer to this one based on our previous conversation, but contract cleaners or employees?
Mix of both as a function of risk management and risk diversification.
Ooh, that sounds like another podcast. Clark, you grew up in the Outer Banks, correct?
Yes, I did.
If you hadn't grown up there, where would you wish you would have grown up?
I was very fortunate to grow up here on the Outer Banks, so it's hard for me to think about anything else. But my wife grew up in Texas, and she's one of the many things I love about her is the Texan approach to life, so I would have looked to live in Texas somewhere.
All right, this is related to my previous question. Inspectors or cleaners that self-inspect?
Right now, we do a combination of both, although I think the pressure is to do cleaners who self-inspect. So right now, I think there is a role for quality assurance, but ultimately, I think that will go more to the cleaning side.
Interesting. Okay, Clark, what's harder, inheriting a vacation rental company from your dad or starting one from scratch?
I can only imagine the entrepreneurs who go out and do this on their own, and I have a limitless amount of respect for them. So I would say inheriting a company and being the second generation comes with its own challenges, but having watched my dad build this from when I was a kid, the challenges that he faced were much more existential in terms of a business than the challenges we face today. So to the folks who have out there who have built and created their company on their own, I have an unlimited amount of respect for them.
Do you think there's hope that my kids might want to do this and take it over?
Absolutely. You know, a lot of vacation rental companies are family businesses, and the advice there is the grass is always greener on the other side, and there are a lot of good schools and universities around America who talk about how to transition family businesses. The number one enemy to a family business transition is surprise, so talk about things early and often.
He hasn't actually met Nicholas or Willem, and so, sir, let me just tell you, they're going to be coming to work for Mr. Twitty. That's more likely. So, all right. One thing on your bucket list, Clark.
I'd like to write a country song one day and hear it on the radio.
Wow. I didn't see that coming. Okay. This is a little inside joke between Tim and I. Emails, Clark. Do you respond as they come in or check them just morning and night?
Believe it or not, I have a lady who reads all my emails for me. And so when you send an email to me, she actually reads it and she prioritizes action today, information, or follow-up. And so I'll talk with her on the phone and she'll walk me through it. But I think email is an enormous time waster. And if you're not careful, you can do email, as we all know, all day and not actually do anything. So I actually have somebody who helps me with that, and she reads every single email that comes across, every text, every chat, every hangout, and she's wonderful, and I'd be living in a dumpster without her.
Wow.
Morning person or night owl?
Morning person, very much. I think for some reason my mind just works better in the morning. Winston Churchill said the mornings are for thinking and the afternoons are for doing. So sometimes I try to think in the morning, but I'm definitely more productive in the morning, and I also like morning meetings, because preferably breakfast, because there's an end to them.
But you're not like Winston Churchill, where you have your scotch at 8 a.m.?
No. We're probably all familiar with the movies that came out. I think those were probably pretty accurate, but I'm still a big biography fan and have read a lot about him, and pretty interesting working habits.
Absolutely. Okay, we know we're your favorite podcast, but what's your second favorite?
Actually, I'll be honest with you. You guys are the only podcast I listen to right now. No, I mean that seriously. I talk a lot on the phone as I drive around, and I'll read things like VRMIntel.com. But in terms of the vacation rental podcast, I listen to you guys. The other thing I listen to are the great courses. I've learned a lot on the great courses over the years.
Oh, favorite great course.
Famous Greeks and famous Romans.
Interesting.
Okay, got a couple more here. Owner guest books and properties. Yes, no, and why?
I like the personal connection, but we typically discourage them because they are tough to quality control, and small comments in those guest books can lead to much bigger ramifications down the road. So when we find them, we actually remove them.
It's like I'm talking to Tim.
I'm reading off the script that he gave me.
My last question is, what nationality is Twitty?
Good question. It's actually English. There's actually a river in England called the River Tweed, and my family somehow shipwrecked on eastern North Carolina hundreds of years ago. So Tweedy and became Twitty, and so I think we've been around here. My grandfather would say we grow like weeds.
Okay, I've got two more local questions. One, topsiders or flip-flops?
Topsiders. I get sunburned.
Okay. And then, favorite Wake Forest sports hero?
Without question, Timmy Duncan. Although Wake Forest right now, little known fact, the highest per capita NBA players coming from a university at the D1 level is Wake Forest University. True story.
As usual, you win nothing other than our appreciation for playing a little game. So thank you, Clark, for that. And so now it's time for Not So Hot Off the Press, but Definitely Happening, Sarah. And so this week, actually not really a breaking story as such, but something came across here recently that I wanted to get Clark's comments on, and that's what to expect in summer travel for 2018. We have a lot of positive economic things going on, but bookings aren't exactly slamming the door closed right now. So what do you think?
Tim and I talked about it just before we started. We've seen some encouraging numbers for us in our region right now in January and February. March was a different story. So we've seen a lot of volatility both in stock market, rumors of a trade war, political volatility. Consumer sentiment's still high, so I think it's still overall good, but I think we're seeing some hesitation right now. I think we're still going to be seeing a very value-conscious guest arriving this summer. I think it's still going to be a game of expecting and getting what they're paying for and great services and expectations. So I think there's very little ability to grow the market without very closely related value increases.
That's interesting because summer is not our prime time, but it's definitely our second biggest season. And we are pacing way ahead of last summer. But interesting to what you said, Clark, a lot of the bookings happen in December, January, February, which were early for us. I think that's a normal time for people to be booking with you. So we'll have to see what happens here as we get through April and May. What about you, Tim?
Well, I think there's a lot of positives out there right now. Certainly the economy continues to do well. The prime rate is actually going up, and that's a good thing. It means growth in the economy. As a matter of fact, our local bank here says expect interest rates to be in the 6% range by the end of the year, which it's been 10 years of interest rates in the fours. So that's good. Unemployment rate continues to fall. Minimum wage is on the rise and a lot of technology out there, so it's easy to make bookings. On the negative side, gas prices are as high as they've ever been at this point of the year in several years. It's hard to get labor, and all these things are in the mix. You know, we are optimistic, cautiously optimistic about the summer.
I absolutely agree. I think that's great. I think the interest rate was a particularly good point there. That means the cost to get financing is obviously going up, which makes investments more expensive. It also puts profit margin compression on the table.
That is the voice of Clark Twitty of Twitty & Company, who we've been talking to this week. And Clark, we thank you very much. This has been very enlightening and a great show. Thanks so much.
I'm very humbled to be here. Thank you guys both. I mean that genuinely. And thank you for doing such a great podcast.
And did we mention that Clark's running for state senator?
I don't think we mentioned that.
No,
he's not involved in the government. He's getting in it.
No, I just think if you don't have a seat at the table, you're on the menu. So we've got to make sure we have a seat at the table.
I wish I could vote, but I do want to meet you. I've never met you, Clark, so VRMA in Vegas, or maybe we'll just meet you in Paris when I take my team there.
All right. Sounds good, Sarah. I hope some people got some takeaways. I'm sure they did, and I hope you have a good rest of the day out west.
All right. Take care, guys.
So long, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Sea to Ski with Sarah and T, Professional Vacation Rental Managers podcast, brought to you by Sarah Bradford of Winter Park Lodging Company and Steamboat Lodging Company, as well as Tim Cafferty of Outer Banks Blue and Sandbridge Blue Realty Services. Together, Sarah and Tim manage more than 600 privately owned vacation rental properties, and both are regarded as experts in the vacation rental management industry. Music provided by Ben Sound. We encourage your participation on this podcast by sharing it with friends, and please feel free to rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Comments or reviews on this particular podcast can be made on their website, seatoski.com, where you can also subscribe to the podcast as well as provide them feedback on this episode or give them ideas for future topics. We look forward to speaking with you next time on Sea to Ski with Sarah and T.